was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph, and worshipped leaning upon the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when he had died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel, and gave commandments concerning his bones. And by faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandments. And by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. And by faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians are saying to do, were drowned. And by faith the walls of Jericho fell down, after we had compassed about 7 days. By faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace. Now we come to the last character mentioned there, and that is the character of Rahab. It seems a strange one to be included in the list, but when you learn more about her, it's not all that strange either. Now then, here we are. It's verse 32. I'm sorry, no, it's not. It's verse 31. By faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace. That's Rahab. Now then, it seems strange that a character like this should be included in such an illustrious list of people. There's Abraham, the friend of God. There's Isaac, a gracious man. There's Jacob, a prince who prevailed in prayer. There's Joseph, an excellent spirit was found in him. There's Moses, who pursued God. And there's Joshua, who had spiritual valour. And now a totally different character. And it's Rahab. And we know of the account in James, in the Old Testament, which is also mentioned in the Epistle of James, if you remember. In James chapter 2, verse 25, likewise also, was not Rahab the harlot justified by works when she had received the messengers and had sent them out another way? Now, what was her story? Well, her background is doubly unhelpful. She lived in a pagan city. She lived a life that was immoral. So those are two things we know about her. You might say she lived in a most dreadful place. At the same time, she joined in that kind of life there. And yet, we should look at her account as an encouragement to many, and especially in the age that we are living in. Now, what should do? I've got little headings here. The protection of friends. The story involves the fall of Jericho, when Joshua sent 2 spies ahead to view the land. And they received them with peace. And in Joshua 2, verse 2, and it was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, there came men in hither tonight of the children of Israel to search out the country. The king commanded that they be brought to him. But Rahab hid them. And so in verse 6, but she brought them up to the roof. We're going back to Joshua now, aren't we? But she brought them back to the roof of the house, and hid them with the stalks of flax which he had laid in order upon the roof. The pursuers give up, and they go on their way, and they are deceived in that sense that they do not believe that she's hiding anybody. Then we learn a little bit about her. We learn that she was willing for some reason, and we could find out later, for some reason, why did she hide them? Why did she risk the wrath of the authorities? Why did she do that? But we find by her own words then, we see her faith here, the petition of faith. She's not in total ignorance when she helped these men. It's not something out of the blue. I've decided to help you. It's far from total ignorance. In verse 9, in that same chapter I quoted, and she said unto them, I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. So she said, well, I have heard of you. And she's taken note of something of the might and the majesty of God. And she feared. And she said, but everybody's afraid. Everyone's afraid because we know that your God is with you, and all the people are very anxious at your approach. But she herself, this fear eventually turns into faith. She knew the fear of God's activities. So she's aware of something of the character of God. So she's not in total ignorance. There is some knowledge there. And that he's careful of his people, and that he safeguards his people. And in verse 10 she said, for we have heard how the Lord divided up the water of the Red Sea for you when he came out of Egypt, and what he did with the two kings of the Amorites and destroyed them. We've heard of that too, how your God made a way through the sea, the Red Sea, and how your God also enabled them to conquer enemies. And all the people around here are afraid at your approach because they know that God is with you. Now, her fear of God turns into something more than just avoiding him, but rather desiring him, because she could easily gain much favour by revealing where these two spies were, but she chose to risk her life and protect them. In verse 11, and as soon as we heard these things, our hearts did melt. Neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. Look at that. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. Well, that's a plain miracle, you know. She goes from fear to faith. But I notice a very interesting thing here. I sometimes wonder, well, I don't really wonder, there's a great deal of opposition to Christianity, but particularly evangelical Christianity and Reformed evangelical Christianity, and that is even amongst nominal Christians. I wonder sometimes who opposes most of all. Are they those who are pagans and oppose Christianity as a block? Or is it really those who know little and resent an experience of the grace of God? But I also feel that this running away from God in our generation is deep down in their hearts. They are afraid. They are afraid. I found this in one of the funerals I was at. And it wasn't very nice really towards the end. I wasn't in control of that. And this is what the head of the crematorium said. I said, this is bad behaviour. He said, yes, it is bad behaviour. But you know, they said, it's worse than this. They do not want to face death. That is, people are afraid. And they cover it by some kind of pleasure, some kind of getting drunk, all these things. But it's hiding, really. They dare not stop and think. They dare not consider their end. They dare not. And yet their fear does not drive them to faith. Maybe with some. but generally speaking. Now, thus a verse again, and as soon as we heard these things by the Red Sea and so on, our hearts did melt, neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. Can you imagine when God moves in revival, what a commotion there will be? Not only will there be, you know, a great joy in the church, but also that there will be great fear also in the country, because they are aware of the living God and his power. Now, she makes a request now, verse 12 of that chapter in Joshua. Now, therefore, I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that you will also show kindness unto my father's house, and give me a true token. So she has a concern for the family. Now, she's taken a great risk. She could have been caught. She took a great risk. But her reason for it is this. Lord, your God, he is God in heaven and in earth below. However does a person get that? It has to be a plain miracle, you know, a wonderful miracle. And you can see that Rahab is, there's more to Rahab than you think. We can kind of judge out really. Here she is, a harlot, an immoral woman. And here she is in this gallery of faith. And has she a right to be there? But who has any right to be there? Had Abraham the right? Had Isaac or Jacob, had they a right to be there? Is it not all by grace? On what basis? She perished not with them that believed not. She received the spies in peace. It is a work of God, and a remarkable work of God that takes place there. Now then, she is distinguished then from the others that perished as one who believed. What expressed her belief, what expressed it, was her works. Her works didn't save her, but her belief expressed them through works. She did good things. She helped these people. Now, James, of course, uses this very well when he says these words, if you remember, that I read to the beginning. Likewise, also, was not Rahab the harlot justified by works, when she had received the messengers and had sent them out another way? Now, you mustn't think that James is salvation by works. What he's really saying is, you see, that unless there are works, there can't possibly be faith. And when there is faith, there are also wonderful works as well. Now, the men give their word. Behold, when we came into the land, thou shalt bind this line of scarlet thread in the window which thou didst let us down by, and then shalt bring thy father and thy brother and thy brethren on all thy father's household home unto thee. It's a lovely relief for this little lady. She had a bad reputation, even in Jericho, but nevertheless, she, for all her bad reputation, maybe she's much worse than most or many people there, for all her bad reputation, she recognized that the activity with the Jews was special, that their God was a God of heaven above and of earth below. She recognized that. You know, it's a big recognition. It's a tremendous, tremendous step to see the sovereignty and the power of God, and that God is with his people. There is an encouragement here for us as well. As God's people, in this age we are living, it is a very strange age and a very frightening age too. But if we can just remember, God is with us. You know, we're not on our own. Even personally, you know, when we die, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, thou art with me. And there are scores and more than that of examples where his personal interest in us, but also in his people as a body of people. His church will not die. It could die out in certain areas, but his church in the world will not die. And even though it has been covered by all sorts of very, very strange teachings and taken the edge of it, yet through it all, who'd imagine through the dark ages now, through it all, remember, I can remember reading a very interesting book, the Reformers and Their Stepchildren. And it showed that from the early days, despite the strange things that came, the power of Rome and the penances and all these various things that they had, through it all, there was a line of people who were men and women of faith. It was fascinating to read. You know, it really was fascinating. So there's always a chord there. However slender, there's always a chord there. And it's God's chord, and it cannot be broken. And then, of course, we have the great bursting forth in the time of the Reformation. Now, the promise of faith in God, he always honours it. In verse 24, and they said unto Joshua, truly the Lord hath delivered unto our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the country do faint because of us. They are aware of us, never heard of us before, maybe, but they are aware, they notice. Now, I think this is vital for us. People must see God in us. He must. People must see God in our daily going, coming and going. They must see God in us, or else nothing would strike their hearts at all. They must see God in the church. And you know, people will know when God is in a church. There is a difference between a kind of service, I don't mean to be sarcastic in any way, that makes a lot of noise. I know of one very, very famous church, and I'm not going to name it. It is so famous, and it's not in Cardiff, right? Where there was a great ministry. Now, the neighbours are complaining, not because many are going there. I don't think anything near. I don't know, but I don't think so. But they have a very amplification with their band to a degree that I would imagine that if you are hearing it, it would be unbearable. It's unbearable for the neighbours. In a busy place full of traffic, the noise is unbearable for the neighbours 50 or 100 yards away. That doesn't bring God. That doesn't bring God. It's faith in God as a church that he is able. And what are these dear people and others like them failing to do? They're saying, what can we do to make people listen? What can we do rather than say, oh God, be with us? And if we have enough faith to believe that, then the people of the land will tremble. And amongst them, there will be some, out of their trembling, will begin to look at this as a God of heaven and of earth. And that's a wonderful thing. So what do we do meanwhile? Well, we keep on, you know. We just keep on and on and on and on with a persistence and a perseverance that should be ours. Now then, it's a great event. God renews his promise to Joshua in the crossing and the tremendous sight as they moved. It must have been quite a sight of that vast multitude moving through on dry ground to the Red Sea, and then the drowning of their enemies, and their coming eventually to Jericho. And the Lord, in chapter 6, verse 2, in Joshua, and the Lord said unto Joshua, see, I have given into thine hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valour. You need not have been afraid. I've given them to you. They're my gift to you. Now then, that's a very wonderful thing. And the city shall be accursed, even it, and all that are therein, said the Lord, only Rahab. Look at God speaking now. Only Rahab, the harlot, shall live, and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. Now, why did she hide the messengers? It's a good work, yes, but it's a manifestation that she had believed that God was the God of heaven and the God of earth. And in pagan times, in a pagan city, I mean, that's a fantastic leap. It's a tremendous leap, you know. Even if it happened now, it does on its own like that, we know we need more than that. But, you know, if it's where then, it is something quite special. But even that, if it happened today, they say, well, we know that God, we believe in God. And we believe it's a God of heaven and earth. Now, there's an evangelical paper I get every fortnight. I think it's a British Evangelical. I forget his title. There are so many of these magazines. And it's a very interesting one. It's a newsy one. It tells you, this is how I found out about that gentleman in one of the western counties of England, who was harassed by the policeman because he was giving tracts out. You know, they pick up, they find everything, and they expose it. They're very good at this. But they said a very interesting thing. It was a survey of England only now, it says. And I found it fascinating. How deep it goes, I do not know. But they said that something between 20 and 25% of the people in England pray. And quite a number of them would claim, say about 5%, or perhaps 10%, would claim that they go to church at least once a month, or every now and again. Or, as they say about some, you know, Christmas and Easter, you know. But that there's some acknowledgement of God. Now, to me, that's a very interesting thing. They wouldn't do that. If you ask them, are they Christian, they probably say they are, but they're not. And I'm sure if you ask more people, do they believe in God, we would be surprised how many people say yes. Well, we do believe in God. They are not Christian. I know that, but I believe, you see, that there is something there. We have yet many people in these islands, yet many, many people. So we, individually and corporately, must show faith in God, not faith in ourselves, not faith in instruments we can buy, not in that, but faith in God. And it will have a fantastic effect upon people. In this case, she heard of the works of God amongst his people, and fear struck their hearts. The majority remained in unbelief, yes, but she believed. She believed. She also had a burden. It's remarkable. She's teaching us quite a lot, you know. When we have believed, have you had a burden for your own family to start? We start with our family, don't we? Then our associates and our friends and so on. But have we a burden that we truly want to see them as the Lord's? Now, all sorts of distractions can come here. You can be satisfied sometimes. Oh, I've been able to have a profession of faith. They said they believe. But you know in your heart that there's been no change. Not to be satisfied with less than spirituality. I remember reading a book a long time ago by a man called Alexander called Christian Experiences. And there's a chapter on children. It's the difference between a spiritual child and a pious child. You can have lots of children that are pious and want to please their parents. I'm not saying that all of them have nothing. You cannot tell. But, you know, you can have piety in children and grown-ups. That doesn't mean get you anywhere, really. It's very nice. It doesn't get you anywhere. But spirituality, very often those children are quite robust, and even naughty at times, you know, but they are more robust, you know, more natural. And yet, at the same time, you can see there is something working in their hearts. Not to fullness yet, but a beginning at least. So we look for that, and we're not satisfied with less. We cannot be satisfied with less. Or we are guilty of really gross neglect. And we are really saying, come on, make a profession of faith. Give your heart to Jesus. Do it now, and I'll pray with you. And you can make a child do nearly anything, you know. Because, like, camps can be dangerous. You know, you can get what we call camp conversions. And that's all they were. I'm not saying for all of them, but many. Because there's an atmosphere of pressure and so on, and it can be not there. We must keep the standard of believing in God and trusting in the power of God and praying for our children and for our relatives, our mothers and our fathers, of course. You see, I'm not so bothered about age myself. Because, you know, people say sometimes the future of the church are young people. It's not. The future of the church are people. Because those young people become people eventually anyway, you know. It's people. I mean, it's just as wonderful to have a conversion of a 90-year-old as it is a 19-year-old. You know, there's not a heavenly choice over both. In fact, the older the one is more important because he hasn't got much time left anyway, you know. So we should really... That's why I'm thinking of one country now. They've gone youth mad. Youth programs. And people judge whether they'll go to a church according to the youth program. You know, ageism. But I haven't seen many of those young people in that little church as I've been there being fed into the church. They finish there, the youth program, and then they wander off. Not, I'm not saying we shouldn't have things for young people, but there mustn't be an end in itself. They are to guide them to the body of the church. One of the lovely things about the revival in and the Hebrides is how these gatherings at that time. And there's one we were in, I can remember, particularly in the manse, and they had six or seven people there from different revivals, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, 60s, 70s. And we were then in the 70s, you know, where... And it was interesting to hear them. But the places crowded, there were lots of gatherings in different places. But in this one, and I'm sure of the others as well, there were very old people, there were middle-aged people, and there were youngsters, and there were children. And there were children. And they were listening to the older people. And the older people were enriching the younger people. Do you see what I mean? The important thing is not a program, it's God. Is to have God amongst us. That's the main thing. And when God is amongst us, we will see that he'll be able to do great things. A leap then from fear to faith to the promise of God. Now, we learn here of the bondage of sin and death and the fear of judgment, but faith is found here. Who think? Looking back at my own ministry, I have found faith in the strangest places. Places I never thought I would find faith there. But I have. And oftentimes, when I've expected to find faith, I have not found it, you know. So it is a work of God. So what do we learn from this now? If God could save a person like Rahab in an evil, ignorant city of God, and she hears of his mighty works, where? Amongst his people. Amongst his people. When he sees that his people look to him for deliverance, look to him for help. You know, what a wonderful thing it would be, and what a unifying it would be amongst the Lord's people. And in Christ, of course, we no longer have our own righteousness. Ours is from fear to faith, and hers was too, you know, but ours is a clearer one in the New Testament. Now, how significant was her conversion? What was God doing? You know, you could see Abel and Isaac, Jacob, what are you doing saving a woman like that? What are you doing that for? Well, I'll give you the answer. He does it because of his sovereign mercy, I know. But also there's another reason here. In Matthew chapter 1, and I think it's verse 5, and Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab, and Boaz begat Obed of Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David the king. Now, further back, we will find, I'm trying to find the verse, Rahab is there. Can you find it for me? Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're not wasting time. Here we are. And Solomon begat Rehoboam. No, I can't find it. Can anybody see it? Anyway, it's in the first chapter of Matthew. She is there. In
4 and 5.
4 and 5. I was near, wasn't I? And Aaron begat Aminadab, begat Nahshon, begat Salmon, and Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab, and Boaz begat Obed of Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse. Now there is Rahab. Oh, I got the right verse, didn't I? Begat Rahab. She's in the lineage of David and Christ. That's where she is. You might say, what, Rahab? The harlot? Yes. Rahab the harlot. She is there. He picks out a little unbeliever who was convinced by his great and powerful works. Picks out that. It's a wonderful thing. And he has a plan for her. The plan is that she would be in the line of David, the line of Christ. It's a remarkable thing. But she's a nobody. Well, a nobody? What is a nobody? We're all nobodies, aren't we? We're all nobodies. We're sinners saved by grace, you know. We are sinners saved by grace. It doesn't matter what position we hold in society, from presidents and kings, whatever you have, you know. They're all nobodies. They all have to die. And they all have a soul. And a soul doesn't wear presidential clothing or king's crowns. A soul is a soul. And there's nothing, we're nothing. But in Christ, we are heirs of God. And joint heirs with Christ. It's a remarkable thing. So we find here in this strange, strange list, it's a remarkable list, we find her there. We find her there. The plans of God are past our understanding, but this we know, that he works his plan out, and he has a plan for his church. He has a plan for our church. He has a plan for every individual that's here. You know, nothing will happen to us that's outside the power of God. No joy, no sorrow, no difficulty outside the knowledge that always will be underneath are the everlasting arms. What is he asking of us? Trust me in prosperity. Trust me in adversity. And I will save even you. Even you. And you'll manifest your faith by your works. Your works won't save you, but your works display that you have believed in the living God of heaven and of earth. Now I finish there.